Energy prices are lower this morning with the March crude oil contract back below $90. But the global tensions created by 100,000 Russian troops on the Ukrainian border are still very real. We'll take a look at the global economic risks created by Russia and by China, and we'll start to preview next week's top producer summit.
Live from the Seconds Day Extravaganza via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Dr. Vince Malanga from LaSalle Economics. Then it's Brian Watkins with a top producer preview. Right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Glad that you could join us here for AgriTalk. Beautiful day. It's already like 25 degrees, Davis.
Gorgeous. My phone says 30.
Whoa. Well, you know, you're a little further south
than me. It feels like 22, which I would take 22. That's fine.
Sure.
I can live with that.
Darn right. Darn right. You're still watching the spread, aren't you?
I am. You got to watch the spreads.
Yeah, it tells the story. That's where the real message from the markets is coming from, and from the weather.
See, it's cold, but it's a dry cold.
It's a dry cold.
That's right, the thing. Right.
Oh, man. Regardless of what Russian President Putin told French President Macron yesterday about, okay, don't worry about it. We're just kidding. We'll pull the troops back. Regardless of what Putin said, it's still very much a risk. The markets are taking some of the risk premium out this morning. Crude oil futures solidly lower. So maybe there's a little bit of easing of the tensions, but you don't trust it, do you?
No. Well, and I've got it's my flagship news story today, so we can get into just some of the details. But
let's get to it.
Well, yeah, I had a really great conversation with Dr. Malanga. Was that 2 weeks ago?
Okay,
when you were here and I was there and whatever. I'm anxious to hear what he's got to say about it. To be honest, I think it's going to be very enlightening. But you want to jump into it? You ready?
Yeah, let's jump. Let's
ready
go.
Now? Well, yep. French officials did say Vladimir Putin had moved toward de-escalating the Ukraine crisis by promising not to undertake any new military initiatives and agreeing to withdraw thousands of Russian troops from Belarus after the completion of planned exercises, according to the Financial Times. Now, Chip, meanwhile, President Biden vowed Monday that a major European energy pipeline would be abandoned if Russia sends forces into Ukraine, but he provided no details on how that would happen.
Yeah, does he have the key to the pipeline?
I don't know.
I have no idea how
it might be a universal key. The one that he used over here, figures will just work over there too. Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The key that he used on Keystone, he's planning to use on whatever the name of the pipeline is. I don't know.
I can't think of it now either.
I don't know how he can make that kind of a statement. I mean. We'll ask Vince. Maybe he's got some way that he can get that done.
Yeah. Well, the U.S. said Monday it has agreed to lift import tariffs on Japanese steel imposed by the Trump administration, removing a longstanding irritant in the bilateral relations between the two allies. The move follows a similar agreement with the European Union in October and comes as the Biden administration accelerates its efforts to beef up economic ties with nations in the Asia-Pacific region. Yep. To counter China's growing influence. Chip.
Yeah, it's an interesting move to lift some of those tariffs on the Japanese steel. We'll see if we see some of the impact on steel prices here, but it's going to be tough to pull those steel prices down.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau took a hard line against trucker protests, which have paralyzed Canada's capital city. The Ambassador Bridge, which connects Windsor, Ontario with Detroit, was shut down in both directions late yesterday. The bridge is the most important land crossing for goods between Canada and its largest trading partner and a crucial artery for auto parts suppliers and manufacturers, Chip.
And it remained shut down this morning, as I understand it. So it's going to create some issues.
USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack has announced a program to fund demonstration projects using climate smart practices tapping USDA's Commodity Credit Corporation to cover the $1 billion price tag. But not all lawmakers were happy with the funding mechanism. Senator Roger Marshall sent a letter to Vilsack saying, quote, it seems USDA is crafting its own farm bill by using the CCC to create its own programs and priorities that have not been established by Congress and to fund projects only USDA deems worthy. I know the CCC has a soft spot in your heart, Chip. Your thoughts?
Well, the CCC is designed first and foremost as a source of relief for agriculture during times of economic stress.
Yes.
So to use it in this fashion, Senator Marshall may have a claim, but this has been in the works for so long, Davis. I don't know why we waited until now to really start talking about, you know, is it right to use those funds?
Well, in a National Federation of Independent Business survey, 22% of owners said inflation was their single most important business problem in January, matching the highest level since 1981. In other news, officials in several Democrat-led states said Monday they would lift mask mandates for schools and other indoor areas in coming weeks as COVID-19 cases fall. And this is interesting, Chip. China has stepped up pressure on Britain over the Falklands, insisting London respond to Argentina's latest demand that it relinquish control of the islands, now known as Las Malvinas in Spanish, Chip.
Yeah, how can China pursue a one-China situation if they aren't willing to support Argentina's efforts to get the Falklands back?
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it looks like. All right. Well, we'll talk with Vince about that, too. All right. Let's bring in Karen Bonert, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. How you doing, Karen?
Hey, I'm good. Happy Tuesday, Chip.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate that. I'm getting used to $20 plus milk futures. What's going on there?
Hey, you and me both. Well, we kind of wonder, is this 2014 all over again? Although producers are cautious, but certainly, of course, welcome the uptick of milk price. But I want to throw some perspective out at you, Chip. There were 11 months in 2014 with Class 3 milk price above $21, with the average price for that year of $22.23, okay? And as you know, we milk 600 Jerseys here in Illinois. So we shipped nearly 4 million more pounds of milk in 21 versus 14. However, we only made 100 grand more net on that milk. So we have we need a bigger impact. So that milk price, this rebound in milk price really needs to last longer than 11 months because the last several years has been hard on dairy. And so we have some catch up to do. So what experts are saying is milk production increase is unlikely because farms aren't super anxious to add cows or expand because there's been so much uncertainty. I spoke to a farmer just yesterday in Wisconsin who milks over 2,000 cows, and they said the same thing. They aren't planning on adding cows, but what they are doing is diving into their genomic program to generate more high-dollar females to create a niche marketing and to add income to that bottom line. And I think that's what you're going to see is a lot more producers to look at alternative ways to generate income, whether it's genetics, beef on dairy, or processing.
Gotcha. Very interesting. Because we've been watching for that uptick in production, and which would probably put a cap on milk prices going forward. All right, Karen, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week. See you in
thank
Nashville.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk geopolitical risk with Dr. Vince Malangala, Sal Economics, right here, AgriTalk.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
All right. Be part of the conversation. You can tweet at us. Just include hashtag AgriTalk in the message or send us an email, host@agritalk.com. Okay. I'm Chip. That's Davis there. And we have been talking a lot.
Yes.
About what is happening with Russia, and it's reminiscent of 2014.
You just don't know what to make of it.
Yeah. Right. Karen was just talking about milk prices in 2014. Well, the last time that we were talking about Russia being on the border of Ukraine and actually advancing into Ukraine was 2014. So it's here we are again. And like you said, we just don't know what to make of it because there's so many different angles to the story. We just need some help understanding what is going on there. And that's why we are turning to Dr. Vince Malanga, president of LaSalle Economics out in New York. Vince, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Good. How you doing, Chip?
Well, I'm doing okay. But it was kind of surreal when Russian President Putin and Chinese President Xi released a joint statement here over the weekend. What kind of thoughts were generated in your head when you heard that?
Well, I guess they, there's no question that Russia and China are trying to get into bed with each other, and it's forming some sort of coalition against the United States and Europe. It's disconcerting, but also not surprising. And it's hard to come to any conclusions from that. But there are warning signs out there that the world is an unsettled place.
Yeah. I want to talk a lot about the risks that we are looking at that are caused by Russia, that are caused by China. But when you think about the potential risks, first off, what led to this, do you think? Why do you think that now they've got the gumption to release a joint statement, Vince?
Well, I think there was certainly a number of signals sent. Certainly the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan sent the signal of weakness or unconcern on the part of the United States. I think there's some evidence of sort of disunity, or at least a fraying of the unity that has existed within within NATO, and I think the adversaries see these things and kind of come to the conclusion that there's an opportunity here to assert cohesion in our part of the world, which is in contrast to their part of the world. And as a result, it's a game of chess, but you take advantage of your adversary's weakness.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one of the things about the statement that the bulk of the statement was Russia's going to do things to help China, China's going to do things to help Russia, and then they're going to work together to help drag down the United States. It's not just to support each other, but to hurt us.
Yeah, but I mean, are you surprised? I mean, I don't think that should offer, that should be surprising. Certainly, the United States and China are at odds. Certainly the United States and Russia are at odds. And so, I don't think that was terribly surprising. I didn't really see anything particularly new in the statement that was issued by Putin and Xi, or the fact that they met, at the Olympics. I think that was largely expected. And, that's the new world that we're living in here. I don't know if you'd call it Cold War, reminiscent of the the post-World War II period. But certainly it's an unsettled world.
Right. Okay. All right. So you know what the theory is. The theory is that Russia is waiting until the end of the Olympics before making a move into Ukraine. Do you think that's accurate?
I've had this notion all along that Russia doesn't intend to move into Ukraine, that I think they've sort of achieved their objectives without having to do so. And I think if they can find a graceful way out, I think the consequences for Russia would be pretty severe. I think it's not, it's not going to be like walking into Crimea. This would be a bloody mess in the Ukraine. I think there would be outrage around the world if they did so. And I think there would be real harm to their economy. which is already struggling significant financial and economic sanctions imposed on them. So I personally think Putin is looking for a graceful way out, and that it's not going to come to that.
Well, Dr. Vince, if I can hop in, you mentioned they may have already achieved their objectives.
Yeah.
I guess I've always sort of had this thought in the back of my mind. Well, Putin just wants to rebuild the USSR, and so that's the objective. But you're suggesting there may be other objectives. What might you mean by that?
Well, I think ideally he does want to rebuild the USSR. But I mean, I think his other objectives is he's created some disunity within NATO. I think with the European, I think it would be much more difficult now for the Ukraine to join NATO. Not that that was imminent, anyway. And he's been able to assert the fact that he may be willing to do something if he had to, but if he doesn't have to, then I think he'd rather withdraw peacefully. Just a guess. I don't think anybody knows. You know, you're trying to read someone's mind, so we're all guessing on this. And I would say that the markets have sort of been on edge regarding this. But, there was a successful meeting yesterday, or seemingly successful meeting yesterday, between our president and the German chancellor. And Macron is over in the Ukraine and talking to the Ukraine and the Russians. And so talk is better than no talk. And I think there's some optimism in the markets today that maybe this is not going to come to a violent conclusion.
Yeah. And crude oil futures, $2.50 lower here this morning. You got the Dow up about 200 points. So
I think the crude oil market is probably also, I mean, there may be a relaxation of tensions with the Ukraine, but I think also, you know, the U.S. and the Iranians are talking. The U.S. has agreed to lift some sanctions against Iran. I don't think there's any question but that our president would love to get some sort of nuclear statement from Iran so that he can lift the sanctions and allow more oil to flow. So that's in there also.
Okay. Hey, is lifting the tariffs on Japanese steel going to have much impact?
Well, I think, of course, I'm a free trader at heart. And lifting tariffs against that are imposed on China and on Japan, I think would have a marginally positive impact, but nothing significant at the moment.
Okay. Is China going to attempt to advance its One China agenda, advance on Taiwan?
My own personal view there, again, is no. But I think they'd like to create an environment such that puts the world on notice that they want, that's their ultimate design. But I don't think there's anything imminent there either. Just a lot of saber rattling, the same thing on Ukraine. Maybe I'm just trying to be Pollyannish on this, but that's sort of my gut feel. And I guess nobody can argue against it because nobody really knows.
That's exactly right. And I trust your, I trust your opinion on a lot of these issues. And I'll admit, this conversation has hasn't taken me off watch, but it has eased my anxiety over this, over these situations some, Vince. So,
I don't think you can, we can neglect this issue. But we just have to watch it. It's almost a case where you sort of have to be able to, you have to be ready to react to it as opposed to anticipate it. Because, the rules of the game have changed, we know. But nevertheless, when push comes to shove, I've got to believe that sanity prevails over insanity.
Excellent. Vince, thank you so much, buddy. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, Chip, take care.
You bet. That is Dr. Vince Malanga, LaSalle Economics. We'll be back with more AgriTalk in a moment.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beige, corn, and soybeans giving back a chunk of yesterday's gains. What's going on there?
Well, we'll start with the soybeans. The soy complex is lower, in particular the soy oil. So that's really weighing on the market and pulling down soybeans. Now, the explosive move we've had to the upside, it's probably not too much of a surprise to see soybeans pull back, even if the soy oil market wasn't doing what it's doing. You know, USDA's reports tomorrow, they'd probably want to take some profits out alongside the market and that type of thing. So yesterday, or Monday's gap is still open on the chart, and I think that's something to watch. If that gets filled, then, you know, we've got probably steeper losses coming through the end of the trading session. So that's primarily what we'll be watching moving forward. Spillover pressure, obviously, on the corn market.
Right, and the wheat market is moving to the upside with spring wheat leading the way.
Yeah, so the Canadian grain stocks as of December 31st, wheat came in well below what was anticipated and well below a year ago on the five-year average. So there was a big expectation for light stocks, but they came in well below what was expected. That turned the spring wheat market around, which is pulling winter wheat futures higher.
All right, lean hog futures again to the upside.
Absolutely. Just continue to rocket higher. Now, we haven't taken out the contract highs. If that happens, then we'll see an extension of gains, I would suspect. The deferred contracts are overbought and due for a correction, but boy, there just isn't any let up in the buyer interest at the moment. And now the February contract is trying to push out in front of the cash index because the cash continues to rally.
Yeah, all right. A little bit of mixed trade in live cattle and some strength in feeders. Thanks, Brian. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is with us. Just wrapped up a conversation with Vince Malanga. Talked a lot about the risks, the geopolitical risks that Russia has created, not just for itself, but for Europe, for the U.S. And they've gone through a lot of effort to draw the world's attention, haven't they, Davis?
They certainly have, and they've got it. They've succeeded in that, for sure.
Yeah, that is right. That's right. Next week, Davis, starting February 14th and running through the 16th.
That's Valentine's Day. Starts Valentine's Day.
Starting on Valentine's Day is the Top Producer Summit. It's called Business on Broadway. It's in Nashville, Tennessee.
All right.
At the Grand Hyatt Hotel in Nashville. So this is the meeting that for decades was in Chicago at different venues in Chicago. Mm-hmm. But the disruption that we had a year ago and the development of the virtual meetings and the use of that technology gave us an opportunity to look at some different venues. And we're taking it on the road and taking it to Nashville. Next week is the live version and then the virtual version, which will include unique content, is February 22nd through the 23rd. We'll talk more about that later. But one of the guys that's going to be presenting next week in Nashville is Brian Watkins from Watkins Farms and Cropzilla, and he joins us right now. Brian, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you for having me on.
Excellent. I'm glad that you are here. We're going to talk about what you're going to be talking about in your presentation, which is titled, Is Your Farm Ready for a CTO? We'll talk about that in a bit. But first, just tell us about Watkins Farms.
Yeah, sure. So we're in Northwest Ohio, and it's family going back a ways. I guess I'm the sixth generation. My brother's son, my nephew farms with us now. He's the seventh, and we grow corn and soybeans. We also have a ferret, a finished hog operation and doing the same things that the generations before did, just maybe a little differently.
Yeah, well, and collecting a whole lot more data than the generations before you. And so tell us about CropZilla. What is that?
Well, that's something that it's been a project for a few years now for me, but it's a software program that I developed to solve some of my problems, primarily around logistics and managing equipment and the deployment of equipment and making sure that we were using data to understand whether we had enough capacity. You know, we're all capacity constraints are just a constant, you know, if given the weather patterns and the years where we've had prevented planning and different things. And yet, of course, you can only afford so much, right? And so being able to fine tune that is really what the whole thing was developed for. And today what we use as much as anything is telemetry, right? So we're tracking all the vehicles, the trucks and the tractors, sprayers, everything, wherever it's at, and understanding that, and then using that to understand what's driving costs in terms of just operationally the things that we're doing, speed and path in the field. And but then the biggest thing is then when it comes time to consider replacement trading, adding to our capacity or maybe changing, you know, our operations, adding a different pass, you know, adding a late nitrogen pad, whatever it may be, all of those things that are operational and logistical, we have a model to work with and we can use the data to drive those decisions.
Interesting. Interesting. Now, is this doing on the fly analysis, Brian?
Yeah, it's essentially real time. I mean, that's the thing about one of the keys of telemetry, whether you're using the John Deere Ops Center or another platform, is to be able to pull up on your phone or on a iPad or monitor in the office, you know, where everything is at right now. And, if you're a grain cart operator and you have an iPad that shows where your trucks are at, that can be very beneficial, right? That's that kind of real-time dispatch almost function of telemetry, right? And so, but we're also getting the data that way. And our analysis goes deeper, right? We're looking at, you know, we're saying, well, in this field or on this day with this operator, what speed did we go? How many acres per hour were we getting? We kind of compare that over various fields, various conditions, and put a cost number to it so we can understand the cost of any sort of suboptimal operation. But also understand the cost. Okay, if it takes me 10 days to plant my corn, that's unacceptable in the way weather is. I need to drive that down to 7. Well, how am I going to do that? And that's what we really want to be able to answer the question.
That's a great example of how of the kind of solutions that you can find through that data. Is that an example that you've used on your farm?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I was going to ask you how has it affected your business?
Well, no question. I mean, I think once we really started looking at per acre costs and really knew what they were and could sort of see the incremental costs of adding things, we realized it wasn't, you know, the sticker price on equipment just blows you away, right? But but there are ways that you can incrementally add things that don't necessarily blow up your cost structure. And there is a return, right? I mean, the reason we want to plant corn in 5-6 days instead of 10 is because there's yield effect every year from that by hitting the right window. It's not necessarily early, it's hitting it when it's right and being able to get it done when it's right. But the other thing is, I mean, we in 2019, we had like 45% prevented planting, which was the first time for us ever. We could have paid for, you just can't even imagine the equipment we could have paid for in 1 year. And so you start, and I'm not advocating that we would have spent all that money, but clearly you got to build that into your thought process.
Yep. So, I get it. This is interesting. Very, very cool. So your presentation in Nashville next week, is your farm ready for a CTO, a chief technology officer? What are some of the things that you're going to be talking about that? I mean, for farmers and for me, for anybody, it's frustrating trying to keep up with the technology out there and put it put it to its best use?
Well, there's really two factors I'm going to try to hit on. One is the strategic side, okay? And
yep, like
and then second about. Is more of a as an operational or implementation side, right? I mean, there's two things that are challenges for us as farmers. But you know, if you think about this, like chief technology officer, I mean, I think one of the theme, I don't know the exact way they put it, but very much top producer is about being a CEO, right? You're a farm CEO. And right. in the chief executive. Well, one of the key roles of anybody in that C level, and certainly the chief executive, is strategic, this sort of big picture. So I'm going to talk about that. You know, how, you know, we work on our business, you know, day to day, trying to be as efficient as we can. But what really is our competitive advantage, and how are we going to be sustainable long term? If we look at ourselves, what are we good at? What are we not good at? You know, and what processes do we need to improve? So that, you know, you can look overall at the business, but then what role does technology play in that? And that's what a CTO does. Right. And you know, farms, of course, aren't going to have this whole sort of set of executives who sit around thinking about these things, right? But somebody has to play that role, right? I mean, and so, you know, your chief financial officer, somebody's playing that role for your farm.
Right.
And the CEO, you know, either in... You play the role whether you do it or not, right? But so the point is, we're going to talk about technology and about technology as a sustainable competitive advantage. And then the second piece of that is, okay, there's the implementation side, right? Which, and I think a lot of times when we think of CTOs, we think about the quote unquote IT person, right? And who's going to help us implement? Because most farms, again, they're not going to have an IT department. But somebody's playing that role. So how do we organize ourselves? You know, if technology is going to be something that you feel like you are going to, you know, push the envelope a little bit on, then, you know, it's easy to say, oh, well, the provider needs to help you implement or don't do it. But in reality, it just doesn't work that way. If you're really going to use technology, you're going to have to solve that implementation process.
Yeah,
some extent. So anyway, that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, and all of this technology carries a price tag on it, but if you've got a plan for the technology and have an understanding of how the technology is going to benefit your operation, it's easier to pull the trigger on the purchase of the technology, just knowing that you're going to put it to use and it's going to make you money in the long run. And that's the kind of thing that a CTO has got to get buy-in from the CEO to put his name on the check and make the purchase, right?
Well, right. It's just about carving some management time and intentionality to work on that, and not just waiting for something to come in the door and then trying to figure it out, right?
So, yeah. I've only got about 30 seconds here, but I got in the notes, it says that you spent time in Ukraine.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was on a 3-year project there with the World Bank, actually as a farm management consultant with some of the different sized farms in Ukraine. This is back in the mid teens. So I was there actually, you know, when they had the riot and they kicked the president out, which is of course kind of the beginning of all these troubles. But Ukraine, I mean, it's a great place. I feel really bad for the situation there. And
fascinating experience, Brian. I look forward to talking to you more about it next week when I see you in Nashville.
Very good. Yes, very much.
All right. That's Brian Watkins, Watkins Farms and CropZilla. He'll be presenting next week at the Top Producer Summit in Nashville. Davis and I will be right back.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for, only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Chip, I don't know if my day is off to a very good start or not. I just noticed something. It's a small thing. I mean,
okay. Yeah, but sometimes generally it's the little things that really matter.
Well, yeah. So I clippered my beard this morning. Just knocked it back a little bit.
All right.
Didn't shave it clear down, but I noticed there's a spot where it's just incredibly uneven. There's like this thicket on the one cheek. And I'm doing it right now. I can't stop like just touching it.
And I feel
you're
like
gonna, you're gonna have to leave it alone.
I got no place to go. No one's
Don't
gonna see
it.
Me.
Don't
no
touch gonna, it.
Who will ever know? And now I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, I've already gone through the whole rigmarole of, you know, cleaning up after myself and like, you know, and doing
it's
the
kind
whole
kind of a pain to do it again. Is that what
things.
You're saying?
Well, yeah, and just to step in there, I mean, I'd either have to take my shirt off and do it, or, I mean, because I got to take a shower after that. I can't have a thicket
problem.
Of whiskers. I can't have a whisker thicket in my shirt. I'm trying to focus on work for crying out loud. And yet, here I am. I'm drawn once again.
To
my
the
hand
whisk-
goes back to my face. I don't know what I'm going to do.
I don't think we should be talking about this anymore.
How about this one then?
Okay.
How about this from Dr. Vince Malanga? Sanity will prevail over insanity.
Yeah.
Will it?
I would.
Has it?
When he said that, I thought, okay, we can find many, many examples in which that has not happened.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably more examples of when it has. When sanity has prevailed. So, okay, yeah, what I heard him saying was let's be in position and ready to react in case something does happen, but don't plan on the conflict escalating when you're making your business plans, when you're anticipating what is going to happen in the markets.
That's good.
He's
right
saying
there.
He's saying take it out, but be prepared for it to happen because there's no guarantees.
It's sort of like assume normal weather when looking ahead to the coming growing season. Just assume normal weather.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That's a very good one. But be prepared for a drought.
Like you always say, stay flexible. You got to stay flexible.
That's right. That's right.
I worked out for the second day in a row today. It's been a big day for me already. Two days in a row now, I've worked out before work. I'm finding that staying flexible isn't that easy.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Well, so what's our takeaway on? I don't feel like Vince thinks they're going to invade.
Yeah, he doesn't. He doesn't think that they are going to invade, and I don't think he, based on the quick comment at the end about China and the one China and will China make an advance on Taiwan, he doesn't think that that's going to happen either.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that Russia stops trying to rebuild the USSR. It doesn't stop China's one China agenda. None of that stops. It's just that the countries, if they would use military force, would. I think the concept is that they would just face global isolation, that everybody would shut them out. It would shut Russia out, would shut China out. I don't know if that's true, especially with China, because their stuff is so much a part of global trade that to totally isolate China would be a major, major undertaking for most countries around the world.
Well,
it just would be.
Just on rare earths alone.
Yeah.
I mean, China's kind of holding all the cards there when it comes to, oh, we're going to make electric vehicles and everything's going to be great. Well, you kind of need the stuff that they've got in the ground.
Yeah, right. And that's, you know, that's part of the upswell of let's build it here, let's make it here.
Mm-hmm.
That started with the previous administration. And I'm not seeing a lot of discouragement toward the manufacturing, manufacturing here in the U.S. right now. It's the biggest discouraging factor on all of that is if you're going to do it green. And that's creating some obstacles for businesses to bring manufacturing back to the United States.
Jumping the tracks.
Okay.
Be the CEO of your farm. In fact, I've even heard it said, be the CEO of your life. Treat your life like it's a business. You know, pursue success in the same way that you would as if you were the CEO of, you know, whatever entity you want to apply that to. And I think,
have a goal and make some plans.
I think it's a great concept, and that's the kind of stuff they'll be talking about at TPS in Nashville. And I understand that that you've been allowed to come back to Nashville. How'd you swing that?
That was a temporary deal. Temporary deal.
What are you up to down there?
I'm going to be moderating a panel on Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
Following the morning show next, right now in a week, I'll be moderating a panel, and we're going to be talking about biofuels, renewable diesel, sustainable aviation fuel, green marine fuel. That's going to be the number one topic. But when I've got Dan Bossi from Ag Resource Company, when I've got Peter Meyer from S&P Global Platts, and when I've got Steve Nicholson from Rabo Agri-Finance on the panel to talk about it.
Whoa, yeah.
Don't you think that maybe some other topics might come up in the conversation as
there
well?
There should be a rule that you four should never be in the same room at the same time. Never fly on the same plane at the same time. I mean, what a lineup.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. It will be a lot of fun because some of the estimates that have come from Dan on the demand base for veg oils in the fuel sector, the same thing from Pete, and then Steve put some outlook behind all of it. I think it's going to be a great, great conversation. Hopefully you guys will come down to Nashville and be part of it. Thanks for listening this morning. Come back 2:06 Central this afternoon. Another TPS speaker, Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net.